The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 436. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. And oh boy, is it going to be a fun one. On this episode, I am joined by an independent comic book creator from Kansas City, Missouri, named Cameron Lee, or I'm going to call him Cam for short. He has a comic called God Punk, which, as he best explains, is kind of a mix of Power Rangers, Indiana Jones, mythology, archaeology, and a whole bunch of other things kind of wrapped up into his tale. We're going to talk all about the project, including God Punk's Kickstarter that's currently going on. It's for issue 2. We'll talk about the perks and the stretch goals and some other things as well. We'll also talk to Cam about his podcast that he used to do. And we'll even wrap up our conversation with Cam helping me to understand the difference between Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas. So trust me, it's going to be a great episode. It's going to be a fun episode. You don't want to miss it. But before we get into my conversation with Cam, I need to thank a great sponsor of this podcast. You know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They have comics from all different eras, whether we're talking about golden, silver, bronze, modern. They've got graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, various collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. As I say all the time, they are a top-notch comic book store. So if you're in Ohio, you owe it to yourself to check out the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But if you are like Cam and you are out in Missouri, you could still check out the store. You could do so by checking out their Facebook page, which is at WG Comics. And they even have a pretty decent website as well. So check out WGComics.com. And again, I thank everyone down at World's Greatest for being a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. I truly do appreciate it. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with the man behind God Punk, Cameron Lee. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I am joined by a man whose name is Cameron Lee. I'm going to call him Cam, if that's all right with him.
Absolutely, yeah, go for it. You call me anything, just don't call me late for dinner. I think that's how that goes.
Oh, that's how that goes, absolutely. Well, you are the man behind a comic called God Punk. So let's talk a little bit about this project, and can you give us maybe a little summary without giving away too much?
Yeah. So the elevator pitch that I always lead with is it's like Power Rangers meets Indiana Jones, and all takes place here where I'm from in Kansas City, Missouri. And basically a aspiring archaeology student, Connor Thorne, gets connected to the Greek god of cicadas, Tithonus, and is tasked with protecting ancient artifacts from a nefarious evil organization that's out to steal them and use their power for, various world domination ways.
In my research, I found that you have a background in archaeology and anthropology.
I do. Yep. I got my undergraduate degree in art history and started working in museums and art galleries around 2018, 2019. And I'm currently in my graduate program, my master's for archaeology and anthropology, leaning into cultural resource management, which is big words for I get to be the guy at construction sites who says, don't dig there. There might be something.
I have a very good friend that has that job. He's had it for now almost like 15 years. But yeah, he's here in Ohio. He's that guy. They have like regions, divide up the state into different regions, and he's in charge of one of the regions. And that's exactly what he does. So I'm familiar with. What made you interested in archaeology and, of course, anthropology? Was that growing up as a kid that you enjoyed Indiana Jones that much?
A little bit, kind of. Okay. A lot of it was like my family has always been really interested in history. I was really lucky to have my dad and my grandpa really got into like our family genealogy and our family history and tracing that back when I was really young. They started diving back all the way. We're only a few generations removed from like Ireland and England, so it was pretty easy to track some of that. But there's you know, my last name's Lee. There's a lot of Lees everywhere. And then the Irish family is Kennedy, and there's a lot of Kennedys everywhere. So it gets kind of messy. And I grew up around like tables and tables filled in my grandparents' house of documents and newspaper articles and death certificates and birth certificates and marriage licenses. So I've always been inundated with that kind of like research and historical, like analytical mindset of stuff. And when I got into college, I started in geology, and I'm horrible at math. I can't do like physics or calculus or basic algebra, like anything past making change. You've lost me. So once I figured out geology was a little bit too math intensive, I had taken an art history course, and an amazing professor, Dr. Cohen, who was a curator at the Nelson Atkins Museum here in Kansas City, kind of took me aside because I was struggling with some other courses and was like, hey, it's not too late to change your major. You're a freshman. It's your first semester. Would you like to come and like talk about changing majors, switching this up? Here's what this department looks like. And I just fell in love with it. I got to walk through the kind of catacombs of the museum and see some, you know, behind the scenes of what goes on in there. And yeah, I hyperfixated for 4 years through my undergrad, and I've just kept it going. And yeah, I guess it started when I was a kid with the family history stuff. And now it's just grown into kind of an exponential. I've got, you can see my stack of books is half comics and manga. And the other half is archaeological like textbooks, basically.
I just want to say real quick, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I know there's some listeners at home going, John, really? Indiana Jones? That's very stereotypical. But it's not. That's what people don't understand. Because from my friend, that's dead on why he went into archaeology. It was Raiders of the Lost Ark is like his favorite movie. He loved it. And as a kid, like, and then I've met other folks through him that have said the same thing. So I know some of you might be, you know, sitting at home going, John's lost his goddamn mind. But no, it's true, right, Cam?
No, it's 100% true. It's a lot like I said, I started with geology major. I have friends who are geologists and started off kind of wanted to go into paleontology. You know, you always, I think like every kid has a phase where they're like, I'm going to be a paleontologist. And a lot of the times that starts with, they saw Jurassic Park and yeah. They want to become, right? They fall in love with, they get into their dinosaur phase. Jurassic Park is nowhere near like scientifically accurate to like what dinosaurs behave like or look like or how paleontology or genetics work. Like Indiana Jones is horrible archaeology. Like it's he's a bad archaeologist. He's a horrible professor. Like it's you know, it doesn't work in reality. And there's, you know, there's shows like The Librarians and the movies that came before that, the librarian series, three or four movies, I think, that like they're not good examples of practical, like real world archaeology, but they get especially kids and like young people interested in the field. And then you know, you kind of grow up and like, as you learn with any subject, like, oh, okay, this is pretty fictionalized, yeah. But you still have that like nostalgia and that like early love for it. So yeah, no, you're totally right. That is, I guarantee you, if I walked into like one of my lecture halls and asked what inspired everybody to get into this, probably at least half the people in the room are going to say Indiana Jones or something like that.
Well, let's talk about another influence, and I'm hoping I'm going to say it correct. Tokusatsu?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's I'm not great at pronunciations myself, so You know, don't fault me for that either, and I won't fault you for it.
Okay, good. So can you explain to the listeners what that is and how it influenced your comic Godpunk?
Yes. So tokusatsu is the literal translation. It's a Japanese term for a type of filmmaking. It's live action special effects. So the literal translation of tokusatsu is special filming. And so if you think the first, really kind of the first tokusatsu film was Godzilla, the original 1954 Gojira. And all the films that came out of that, Godzilla, Gamera, to an extent kind of King Kong even before that, but then shows like Super Sentai, which got adapted into Power Rangers, Kamen Rider, and then Metal Hero shows that turned into Beetleborgs and Mystic Knights of Tirnanog and all these shows that Saban brought over to the U.S. It's like live action special effects superheroes and practical effects shows and movies, most notably for like kaiju and giant monster movies, and then like transforming superhero shows like Power Rangers. So that's kind of the genre. It expands into that. It's one of those things where like some people will say like, no, this isn't tokusatsu because it's an animation or it's a comic, or this isn't tokusatsu because it doesn't have a kaiju or a henshin hero in it or something like that. It's like, there's not hard line definitions, you know. It's kind of subjective.
And so obviously you liked those as a kid, and you used those when you created your world of Godpunk.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. I was a Power Ranger. I'm wearing a Power Ranger shirt right now, even. I was a Power Ranger kid through and through. I was born in 95, so I was right in the thick of the late 90s wave of Power Rangers and those like Saturday morning cartoons and shows. And that kind of waxed and waned as I got older. And when I got into college, I met a handful of folks online, just, you know, as you do in different fandom groups and stuff, and discovered the Japanese side of all these shows, the footage that was getting purchased and brought over to the U.S. to make Power Rangers. And I started diving into those shows, and I discovered independent tokusatsu, indie toku, and this whole subset of creators in all around the world, America, France, Mexico, Canada, Japan, China, everywhere you can think of, there's probably at least one project, or has been in the last 30 years, one indie toku project. And it's just folks getting together and making a monster or superhero or supervillain costume and doing some like usually cheap, campy special effects. And, you know, maybe 5-minute video, or maybe a whole like hour long feature film that they try to make, and just making something and creating a story. And a lot of the times it's pretty local to them or very personal to the people making it. And I met a great guy, Matthew, who created the Immortal Red Fox series. He's based here in the States, and he's kind of treated as like an honorary local hero in Japan because he did such a great job with creating this this IP, this character and world. And he's gotten it episodes on his YouTube channel have some of the Power Ranger voice actors have dubbed some of his episodes. Cool. He's done some really cool stuff. And he kind of I met him and we started talking, and I was just like, hey, I love this. How do I do that? What did you do to make this? And he just kind of walked me through the steps, and, you know, just like you would, you know, how do you make a podcast? Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, you just do it. You start recording yourself and work around.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about podcasting here in a little bit, but let's stick to Godpunk. Is there a story behind the name? Cause it's such a unique name.
Yes.
And in my research, I didn't seem to find a clear-cut answer. So what's the story behind the name Godpunk?
I will say I'm crazy lucky that it had not already been coined by like a huge franchise or anything like that, because it's a good, like, I think, you know, I'm a little biased. I think it's a pretty good name, but it kind of like, you know, it's snappy. It's kind of a genre subname, like steampunk or cyberpunk or, you know, diesel punk, things like that. So Godpunk, I knew about it from James Lovegrove as an author who wrote a series of books that are all little like anthology books where one has, let's say, like the Greek gods are real, but it's a modern military, like PTSD story of soldiers basically fighting the gods, but on a, like a military front. And it's a very grounded story. And then he'll have one that's the same kind of vibe, but with Aztec gods or with Norse gods and these kinds of things. There, a lot of the times are, I think he has a military background, so a lot of the times they were, you know, military campaign kind of stories. And I was at the time, same time I was reading those books, I was starting my art history and anthropology courses. I was doing my family history stuff. So it just like all kind of melded. And when I was starting to write Godpunk and doodle down designs and stuff in like the back of my lecture halls, definitely paying attention to all of my classes, I could not think of a name for the life of me. And so I just wrote down Godpunk on a couple of my pages. And when I started hiring artists to do concept art for me, or friends to do concept art for me, I would just send them, hey, here's my like Godpunk character design. And it just kind of stuck. They would send back like, oh, here's, you know, your art of Godpunk. I'm like, oh yeah, this is just Godpunk. No, that you're right. That's his name. Yeah. So it was kind of like, it wasn't necessarily intentional. It was just kind of like, I stumbled into it a little bit.
Well, let's talk about the creative team. And I'm going to say that the creative team has changed a little bit, because with issue zero and issue one, I saw that there were some different folks affiliated with that, with those projects. But I'm going to talk about the current issue, which is number two, and we'll get to the Kickstarter here in a minute. But let's talk about Brian Morehouse, who is your editor. Where did you find him? Is he a friend? Is he somebody that was recommended by another artist or whatnot? How did you find Brian?
So Brian is a friend. We met while I was in college, but not at college together. And we actually met through a friend of ours who owns a local art gallery here in Kansas City. And we just kind of hit it off. We're about the same age. He is like a competitive power lifter and like looks just like, you know, he's ripped. He's like a total gym bro, but just like the nicest guy. He is a huge manga and anime nerd. He had a manga channel on YouTube for a few years. He was in the podcasting scene with manga and anime reviews and stuff. And we just really hit it off. And when I, back when I did Godpunk issue zero in 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic and lockdowns, he and I would just chat on the phone for hours because we didn't have a lot else to do. And we were just hanging out at home. So we would just, you know, pull up on a Zoom call and just hang out and chat and exchange ideas for. He's doing YouTube videos at the time. I was like doodling and jotting down story ideas. So we just kind of hit it off. And he's always been kind of in the background as I've been working on Godpunk stuff and jotting down the larger story arcs and characters and everything. And then when I started working on issue two, I was like, hey, I really need a hand. I am not a great people manager. I'm bad at being the bad guy when I need to be. And I'm bad at I'm not great at deadlines myself. I'm really bad at holding other people to deadlines. And Brian kind of stepped up and was like, all right, I gotcha. What do you need? Like, I'll go through your scripts. I will be, you know, constructively critical and, you know, blunt and honest with you. And I'll talk to the artists when you can't, and I'll coordinate deadlines and help you with the Kickstarters and all that kind of stuff. So he's just been like my second in command, my left hand for this entire thing. With issue two, it's really where that role kind of like shined a little bit more for him.
Well, let's talk about the more creative guys, you know, Chris Burr, Micah Myers, both of those gentlemen lending their hands to the pencils, the inks, the colors. And then in Micah's case, he's the letterer. How has been the experience working with those guys?
Absolutely incredible. They have been just a complete joy to work with. And it's been so great to not just have like a contractor and employer kind of relationship with them, because we will, I met Chris through a Facebook group that we were on for comic creators. He was looking for work. I was looking for artists. just worked out. I loved his style. He's got a very kind of animation, like high concept color palette. And I fell in love with it. And he's based out in Germany. I was real worried about not necessarily a language barrier, but maybe a cultural barrier with, it's based in Kansas City. A lot of the landmarks and scenes take place at very specific Kansas City things that even other Americans aren't going to really identify the way that you would, you know, Manhattan or Chicago or LA. And on top of that, it's heavily inspired by a Japanese genre of filming and media. And he just snapped it right up and had no problems wading right into the deep end, and has, you know, been just a real joy to work with. And to, you know, he understands the flow of a page and the panel layouts. And yeah, it's just been really great. And then Micah actually lettered a comic for a friend of mine, TJ, who is working on a horror thriller comic called Paranoia. And so I kind of knew him tangentially through that. He's worked for DC, Marvel, IDW, Image, Dark Horse, all these folks. He did some work for the Five Nights at Freddy's books, the recent American Psycho comic adaptation. He did some lettering on that. So he's like the big wig. I get nervous talking to him and sending him pages still, even though, like, you know, we've been doing it for 6 months or so now that I've been talking with him. But yeah, he's been so great to work with. And you know, lettering is one of those jobs in comics that I think kind of gets skipped over a little bit. Yeah. Or it's not really taken as seriously. I don't know. I like, he has a real like passion for it. He has a real eye for how the speech or thought bubbles need to fit on the page, how it flows, the, you know, fonts and the kerning of the letterings and all that little detail. And he's also just has a killer work ethic and is just like real keen to, you know, get to work and get the job done. I'll send him two or three pages here and there as they get done coloring. And like that day, he's already sent them back. It's like, all right, here's the like first draft. You look over this for me and I'll finish it up for you. And it's like, oh yeah, I wasn't expecting these for like 2 days, man. Hell yeah, let's go.
But that's that experience. I'm sure he's had to work under the pressure of DC and Marvel and IDW and that, obviously. And you've gotten him on board with this project, and that's got to be like, just, he's got a wealth of knowledge I'm sure he brings to the table.
Yes. Yeah. It is like, even just like sending him the script, and he'll just have a little note here or there, or maybe the wording is a little odd, or hey, this bubble's, you got a lot of dialogue in this bubble. You really want to stick to like 40 words per bubble. You really want to stick to, you know, under 100 words a page. Little things like that, where it's mm-hmm. I wouldn't have thought of that. You know, where would I have? I'm not going to Google around for that. I wouldn't have thought that was something. And I know that that's something I struggled with when I look back at issue 0 and issue 1. I'm like, oh yeah, I did. A lot of these were kind of really wordy in some of the panels. And I did, you know, it was a little long winded in some of these dialogue sections. Like, yeah, no, he is like, he nailed it. And it's just little things like that, that, like you said, they come from the experience and working in the industry and with like larger creative teams and having that like deadline mindset, where it's like, I say to him and Chris, I really want to have this stuff done by the end of July. And Micah's like, oh, give me a week. I'm like, no. Like, I have until the end of July. You don't need to like, prioritize this by any means. I know you have like real projects to be working on.
Well, let's talk about the Kickstarter for issue 2. Right now, the Kickstarter is live. What's the status? How far in are you?
So I believe at the time of recording, we are just over 40% funded. We have a $1,500 goal, which basically funds the first print run of issue 2, and then the little like side rewards like stickers and posters and prints and all that jazz. But yeah, we kicked it off on the 4th of July, and it runs until August 3rd. And it's been really exciting so far. This is officially the end of week one. And I'm still kind of like, I'm super anxious, but I also, there's, you know, 22 days left until it's actually through, and we're making really good progress so far. So, yeah, I've been like curating my like daily posts and trying to figure out like what other avenues I can reach out to. What are, I didn't post on Reddit yet, or I didn't post over on these Discord servers that I'm in, or I got to hit up. I work with Broken Realities Comics. It's a small indie publisher. And so I was like, oh, hey, here's a press release. Can you send this out in your next newsletter mailing this month? Like little things like that where I'm like, oh yeah, okay. I gotta get this out and like just keep momentum going and just trying to stay steady. But yeah, it's been really fun. I've got a lot of rewards in there that can kind of catch everybody up if you're, you know, new to Godpunk, where you can get digital or physical copies of issue 0 and issue 1. You can get, I've got trying to post some like behind the scenes stuff of going from early sketches into flats, into colors, into the lettering phase, and kind of like give people a glimpse of the process in there a little bit too.
I have to ask, because as I was doing my research, I took a look at the other Kickstarters. Did you actually have floppy disks for the Kickstarter for Godpunk?
No.
Okay.
No.
They were on there, and I'm like, hot damn, this is sweet. If he did, damn, man, this is awesome. And so that's why I had to ask about it. I didn't know if it was an actual perk or stretch goal, or if it was just to catch attention.
Yeah, it was just to draw attention. I'll turn the camera around real quick, because it's funny you say that. I've got my my Apple II on the desk.
Oh my! Oh my!
Yeah. So it would not be. It's not like above me to get floppy disks. I'm a physical media nerd, so I have cassette tapes and vinyl and stacks of books and
Okay. All right. Well, good. That question was answered, because that was the burning question that I had. Like, I gotta know, how do they do it? Like, because nobody's got a floppy disk now. And I thought maybe it was like some type of like packaging or something. And I'm like, I gotta ask about this. So,
no, I'm like jotting that down, because that's, that actually be like kind of killer for packaging for like a small like sticker pack or something, even. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how you would do it. I don't, you know, I'll figure it out.
I got a 3D printer on the other side of the desk.
Yes. New technology meets old technology. I love it.
I'm going to interrupt this conversation with Cam for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, posters, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. Basically, they got you covered for your comic book fandom. You can check out the store in person if you're in Central Ohio. Their address is 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is the web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics.
Well, let's talk about the Big Bad Beetle Bros podcast. It's your podcast that you are the host of. Can you describe for the listeners what a typical episode would be like?
Basically, every episode was me and two of my friends, Ryan and Nick, and occasionally a guest host or two, watching an episode of Big Bad Beetleborgs, which is another 90s Saban era show, kind of not really a spinoff, but kind of a spinoff knockoff thing of Power Rangers. And we would get a little inebriated and watch this incredibly corny, ridiculous, cheesy, outlandish show, and just talk about it for usually like around an hour or however long we could keep listening to each other's voices. And we did that for 3 years. We went through all, like, I think there's 80 episodes or so of the show, and a pseudo movie. It's one of those things where they filmed it like a movie and then split it into four parts, but then they sold it on VHS as a different thing without the commercial cuts in it. It was a weird time, because it was the really like the only podcast that I've done like a full series of a podcast of, or that really that any of us had. and we got swept up by the Project Louder Network, which is the podcasting network that we're still technically members of, even though we're not doing content right now. But it's just a group of like really great creatives who put out a lot of movie reviews and TV review podcasts and a lot of pro wrestling stuff, things like that. And we got to interview the Gabe Torres, who directed 25 episodes of Beetleborgs. We got to interview Rick Schick, who was the VFX artist for Power Rangers, Beetleborgs, VR Troopers. He worked on Captain America and the Winter Soldier and just a whole bunch of shows. He's still working. He's still in the industry. And I think he just started a YouTube channel that talks about his time with Power Rangers and the various little practical effects and stuff they did. But yeah, it was just 3 years of us goofing off once a week and watching this really crazy show. And then we kind of capped it off in, let's see, like three years ago. Ooh, it's 2024. 3 years ago, we went out to California, made a huge road trip with a bunch of friends and visited, tracked down a bunch of the filming locations from the show. And that was kind of our like the culmination of doing the whole podcast.
Were you, obviously you were a fan of this television show as a kid. Did you have the action figures and the toys and all that jazz too?
I did. Yeah. I was kind of the one who I broached it with the other guys that like, hey, you know, it was 2020 or 2019. Hey, do we want to do a podcast? And then 2020 hit and it was like, hey, we're going to do a podcast because we need to socialize. We need to talk to people. We're running out of stuff to do. We can only play so many video games. Let's do this. And yeah, I just kind of they indulged me. And then eventually it became a kind of a mutual love, but it was, they were aware of it, but it was really fun to kind of introduce them to this weird show that I hadn't rewatched since I was a kid. It's not like Power Rangers where I kind of kept enjoying it into adulthood. And to go back, it's such a weirder show than Power Rangers. And, but it's almost like more endearing. You can see where like, oh, they had no budget this episode. And this is how they made that work, or this is what they were going for. And oh, they probably spent $5 on that. Like things like that of like, yeah, I don't know. It's a little as like, you know, I'm working on my own creative projects where I'm pretty restricted in my budgeting and things like that. It's kind of nice to look at a show from an era where it was like, oh yeah, like these guys weren't getting paid anything. Like these were like non-union actors and like child stars and, you know, maybe the first or second thing that a VFX artist ever did in their career. And yeah, it was pretty fun.
Well, going back to podcasting for a minute, what did you think was the best and worst thing about podcasting?
Oh, whew. Best thing was getting to hang out with my friends like once a week. It was an excuse to hang out, really. Like it was an excuse to hang out together and to get to meet a lot of new people, a lot of like fellow fans, and then also great guys like Gabe and Rick who worked on the show. Worst thing is managing like social media and I'd say editing, but we had people for that once we joined Project Louder. But yeah, managing social media. It's one of those things that just goes a little over my head, and I can make graphics and I can make designs and prepare posts, but I'm so bad at knowing what's gonna work and how to word things and when to post and have I posted too much or yeah, things like that. That was, it just drove me nuts the whole time that we did it. Yeah. I never got used to it. I'm still not good at it with Godpunk and anything else.
Well, I agree with you 100% because, you know, as I said to somebody earlier today, that's the most frustrating part. I love doing this, but the frustrating part is figuring out what is going to pop that algorithm, but you don't really know. And then they change it on you. And you know what, this hashtag was great 5 minutes ago. It's a nightmare. And I sometimes just throw my hands up and be like, whatever, whoever listens. I don't care at this point.
Yeah.
This is bullshit. So
yep.
You did say though that you are currently not working on the podcast, so do you have hopes to bring it back?
Kind of. We get asked pretty often. The thing was, and we kind of hit the exact same thing that Saban hit when they were making Beetleborgs, where they stopped making Beetleborgs because they ran out of the Japanese footage of the heroes and villains. We stopped making Beetle Bros because we ran out of the show to review. And we were like, we could do other shows, but then it's not really the Beetle Bros podcast. We could, they've just, a group of fans just finished subtitling in English the Japanese version of the show. So we could go and do that. And then that's another 80 episodes of a different show with half of the same footage we've already seen. Or we could take a break for a while and kind of do other creative ventures. I dove more into Godpunk. Nick has dove into a lot of photography lately. Ryan has dove into his own things. We're kind of figuring it out, but it's one of those things where, like, probably once a month, one of us gets a message like, when are you going to do something new with Beetle Bros? It's like, oh, we're thinking of it. We're going to do something. Probably. Maybe.
Well, I mean, you have a lot on your plate right now with Godpunk, so that's totally understandable.
I was just talking to Brian earlier today of my grad school classes start back up in exactly 1 month. One month from probably when this goes, a month and a week from now or so. And I'm kind of just looking at my schedule and I was like, okay, I've got the next two scripts ready. I may not be able to coordinate very much, so be ready to start working with Chris and Micah a lot more than you have mm-hmm. been, and kind of taking over that role a little bit, which he's super keen to do and incredibly gracious to help out as much as he has and will be. But it's one of those things where I'm kind of like looking at everything that's on my plate. It's like, okay, like day job, grad school, Godpunk. Do I want to do another podcast? I've got like two cosplays that I'm working on. I've got, how many events do I have coming up, like conventions that I need to either go to or travel to or all these kind of things. I'm like, all right, yep. I need to write everything down because I will forget something somewhere.
All right, Cam, we're going to hit the Kickstarter one more time and talk about social media and all that jazz. But I have one final question for you. It's one that may be controversial. I hope it's not, but it might be. What's the difference between Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas?
Oh, I love this. Is controversial, but I love this question because I'm a history nerd. So Kansas City, Missouri is actually named after the Kansas River, which is named after the Kansas tribe that was here before all of us were here, and actually predates Kansas City, Kansas, predates the state of Kansas by I think like a couple decades. So Kansas City, Missouri, for one, was here first. I think it was actually also Kansas City, I think, was here before Missouri or Kansas, either one. So it's kind of the preliminary. Kansas City, Kansas was Wyandotte, which is the county name right now. And Wyandotte, also a name of the tribe that was local to the area. And when Kansas City, Missouri started really picking up steam with all of the river traffic and everybody moving out west, Kansas City was kind of like the last stop before you head out towards Colorado and California. And Kansas City, Kansas, or Wyandotte at the time, was like, we've got to capitalize on that. We need people coming here. So they called themselves Kansas City, Kansas, because you say, oh, hey, there's this business in Kansas City. I'm going to go there. And so they kind of piggybacked off. I may get a lot of Kansas people who are really pissed at that I explain it that way, but that's the way that I'm going to explain it because that's my understanding of the history. But
you can hate tweet me. There you go. Leave Cam alone. Fine. You're mad at that question. I'm the one that asked it. You come after me.
Man, if the worst thing people get mad at me is some Kansas City, Kansas versus Kansas City, Missouri stuff, that is like so, like, I'm totally fine with that. You guys could throw that at me all you want. I'm used to getting like people coming out and saying the pyramids were built by aliens and all sorts of stuff. I can handle some border wars. And yeah, no, that's a decent question. I'm so used to,
wanted to know.
I know. Yeah.
And when I was like, wait, he's in Kansas City, Missouri. I know what else I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask about the floppy disk, and then I'm going to ask about the names of the city. Those two things have to be asked. To hell with everything else. Those are the only two questions I need answered.
So. That's the important part, really.
Yeah.
Whenever we have like a big band or anything come through the metro, it's always funny to see like, okay, are they going to say, "Good night, Kansas," or are they going to say Kansas City? Or are they going to say Missouri? And are people going to get pissed off at them for it? Because I've been to some concerts where it's like the band pops up. This is like this huge international band, or you know, Disturbed or somebody at Rockfest stands up and they say like, "Well, hello, Kansas." And the whole crowd is suddenly pissed because you're on the Missouri side and you should know better.
They need to do like the Simpsons, write it on the back of their guitar. Like, nobody rocks yes. like Springfield. Yeah. All right, Cam, let's recap one more time about the Kickstarter. So can you run down all of the perks, the stretch goals, the status, when it ends, all that jazz for us real quick?
Yes. So if you go over to Kickstarter and you just if you just look for Godpunk, both of my issue zero and now issue two, I think, are the only things that show up when you search for Godpunk on Kickstarter. So Godpunk number two on Kickstarter, for as little as $5, you can get issue two for a digital copy. You can also add for another $5 the copies of issue zero and one for the digital catch up bundle. And then starting at $10 and all the way up to $100. We've got tiers for physical copies. I've got three different cover art options available from three different amazing artists that I've gotten the chance to work with. There's an option to get all three physically if you would like, if you're a collector like that. I'm going to be hanging on to three copies myself and framing them somewhere probably. We've got some exclusive art prints that are only going to be available through this Kickstarter. A sticker set with like a dozen different stickers that we're going to throw in there. And at the highest tier, I've got some Cicada Changer key change, which are the little device. I was about to show the camera. I was like, this is an audio podcast. it's the device that Connor uses to transform into Godpunk. Is basically his morpher is the Cicada Changer. And so we've got little keychains, little resin handmade keychains of that at the highest tier at $100. And yeah, you can find everything Godpunk at Official Godpunk on all social media. That's the YouTube, that's the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitter. I'm not as active on Twitter because Twitter's kind of a mess. I post on YouTube probably once a year, and it's usually a trailer for whatever new project is coming out. And Instagram is like the main thing that I'm at. Instagram and Facebook, you can see every update. I try to post a lot of like behind the scenes when I'm making stuff. And then July 30th, I will be in Blue Springs, Missouri at Karma Community Market for their anime and comics event. And then I will be August 3rd. We're going to do a launch party for the end of the Kickstarter because that's the final Saturday of the Kickstarter. It'll end that morning. That's going to be at Habitat Contemporary Art Gallery in the Crossroads here, right here in Casey Mo. It's my friend's art gallery that I was talking about earlier. He's going to lend us the space to kind of kit out. I'm making a bunch of props from the comics, a bunch of artifacts and things like that. So we're going to kind of like kit out the gallery space, like a scene from the comic, and just kind of hang out, party. I'll have, you know, copies of the earlier books available, things like that. And then the end of August, I think the 24th and 25th, I'll be at KC Retro, big new convention in Overland Park, Kansas. And that's I think all I've got booked up right now. But yeah, the Kickstarter is at like, I think just exceeded 40% today, officially 1 week after we launched it. So to me, that's pretty good progress. We've got a $1,500 goal to fund the first run of print copies. And yeah, we're chugging along, trying to keep momentum.
Well, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, I urge you to go over to Kickstarter, check out Godpunk, take a look at it. I guarantee that you're going to like it. And if you can, plunk down some cash, or I'm sure, Cam, you wouldn't care if you're in a spot where you're a little bit, times are tough, at least spread it. Spread the word, right? You know, get out there on social media, let people know about it. Every little bit helps in this world of like, you know, word of mouth advertising, shall I say.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, if you can just share it around, if you have friends that are Power Ranger fans or Indiana Jones fans or history nerds, or, you know, if you know somebody in Kansas City, maybe, you know, Kansas City people. Another thing is Kansas City people are like one of the only locals who dress like tourists. We all wear Kansas City stuff constantly. You walk around Kansas City, we're all wearing KC shirts. We're all wearing Chiefs and Royals and Monarchs and KC Current, all that stuff. So if you tell a Kansas City person that something is based in Kansas City or like mentions Kansas City, we nerd out like crazy. We love that shit. So yeah, if you've got like a relative over in the metro in Missouri or Kansas, hit them up and say, hey, you got to check this out. Or if you've got like some, you know, a Facebook group or, you know, your Instagram or something like that, you can just share it around. You know, I'm horrible at asking people for money to begin with, so I'm never going to ask somebody to, you know, put themselves out to buy my book. And I just appreciate whatever anybody can do. And if that's, you know, click and share on the Twitter or on your Facebook post, I appreciate the hell out of it.
Well, there you go. Cam, thanks so much for sitting down and chatting with me this evening. It was fun.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
You got it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Cam, talking about God Punk, his great independent comic book that he is putting out there in the world for you to pick up and read. And again, check out the Kickstarter for all of the information on how you can help out the campaign and whatnot. And I want to thank Cam real quickly once again for taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me as well. I really do appreciate it. All right, now it's time for you to learn how you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode of the PVDcast. First, you can be old school and you can email me. The email address is at johnorlando@pvdcast.com. But you can also find me on X. My personal X handle is at PVDMVP. And you can leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for at PVDcast. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about this show, and I would greatly appreciate it if you did. Well, there's a bunch of different avenues where you can find it. First, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and the best place to get every new episode. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets like Spotify, like iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, etc., etc. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting application, go into the search bar, put PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put John Orlando after it, and you should find it. And since we're talking about those apps and outlets, if you listen through one of them, please rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And while you're doing it, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you one more time for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2024.